Introduction. In 1929, a computer arrived at Britain's War Office. The work of a computer, Class 2, is mainly in connection with the calculation of the trajectories of projectiles in artillery fire, reads the official description of its task. The computer's name was Kathleen Marion Lewis. This was not one of those pet names that engineers like to give to their creations. Kathleen was a person, not a machine. When the job had been advertised, it had been made clear that applicants needed to be British and have a maths qualification. The advert also said that women would be paid £100 a year, £20 less than men, and they would have to resign if they got married. That did not put Kathleen off. Her job was to perform calculations because a computer in those days was someone who computed. Out in the foothills of northern India in the 1920s, another member of the War Office called John Tiltman had the title Signal Computer, as he worked with pen and paper. His job was to break the codes of Russian signals or communications, a task he would labour on for another half century. Even though he resolutely remained old school in his methods, his work would contribute to the arrival of the first computer, a machine called Colossus, designed to break German-coded communication in the Second World War. Tiltman went on to work for Britain's Government Communications Headquarters, GCHQ, and America's National Security Agency, NSA, only retiring in the 1980s. That decade saw the arrival at the NSA of a black box, roughly the height of a man, named Frostberg. With its red blinking lights, which were mainly for show, it could perform 65 million calculations in a second, far more than Tiltman could have scribbled. During the intervening decades, computers went from being a tool for espionage, by breaking codes and collating data, to a target of espionage, because they held valuable information, and finally to being the means of espionage itself, because they could talk to each other, one machine could steal another's secrets. This is the story of how that happened, what came next, and why it matters. There is a saying attributed, perhaps falsely, to the information theorist Marshall McLuhan. We shape our tools, and then our tools shape us. The birth of the computer and the contours of its youth were shaped by the demands of code-breaking and espionage. But in time, the power of computing would in turn transform the spying business. And as computers become increasingly all-pervasive in our modern society, the intertwining forces of computers and espionage are now reshaping the entire world, from the rise of China to the phone in our pockets, making what was once the preserve of a few intelligence agencies something that has implications for all of us. This was originally intended to be a narrower book about cyber espionage, the stealing of information over computer networks. But as I tried to understand what it was and where it came from, it soon became clear there was a more interesting story to tell. Every time I pulled at a thread about today's world, it drew me further into the past. I wanted to understand the history of computers and spies, how it began, and how it has shaped the present. It drew me into how spies first developed computers for a specific task, code breaking, and how the battle over encryption and protecting or exploiting communications is today more fiercely contested than ever. It drew me into understanding how spies were the first to appreciate the power of computers to unlock the value hidden in large amounts of data, now a staple of the private sector and part of all our future. And finally, it drew me into the story of how computers and communications merged with the creation of the Internet and the emergence of hacking to exploit vulnerabilities, which in turn has changed the age-old practice of spying. The revelations from Edward Snowden that came after I had started the book added extra spice to the tale. What I found was a story that was far more interesting and mattered far more than I had expected. What is spying? At its simplest, it is finding out secrets. Since time immemorial, that has involved establishing the intentions of another state, such as its plans and capabilities for waging war. Those secrets may also be the identities of people, such as those who want to remain hidden, like enemy spies operating in your country, or terrorists planning to attack. This takes spying into the trickier domestic domain, where it can also be used to root out dissent or as a form of social control, in the way the Stasi deployed surveillance in East Germany during the Cold War. The secrets you are after might be discovered through human spies and agents, the subject of my last book on MI6, but they can also be unearthed by intercepting the communications of others. In England, the practice of the state clandestinely reading letters dates back to at least the 14th century. The need for a single post office with a monopoly over mail was justified in 1657 by the state requiring access to communications in order to discover and prevent many dangerous and wicked designs against the Commonwealth. It was an era rife with fears of plotting at home, guided by the hidden hand of those abroad. The fears and desires that have driven spying have changed little over the centuries, but the technology has. Our story begins a century ago when Britain built a formidable machine to search for the wicked designs of the enemy and its agents in war. The First World War may seem a slightly odd place to start a history of computers and spies, since it predates the electronic world, but starting here serves two purposes. Firstly, it is the time when signals intelligence, studying your adversary's signals, mainly although not exclusively communications, came into being. The alerts cutting of cables marked the beginnings of information warfare and the establishment of an industrial-scale global intelligence operation. This gathered material in bulk from a commercial cable infrastructure that Britain dominated. Computers were a long way off, but the concepts that would underlie their use in modern espionage, from mass sifting of messages to traffic analysis of data and, of course, code breaking, would be learnt in these years. There were also concerns over privacy. Secondly, the reference point of the pre-electronic age also allows us to see much more clearly what the computer has and has not changed about spying. Britain's First World War system parallels the modern intelligence system that the UK and US built a century later based on access to the cables that convey worldwide data traffic. But those data pipes carry something far richer than the telegraph clicks of the past, and so modern computer-based digital intelligence, with its updated form of packet inspection, offers something qualitatively as well as quantitatively different from what was undertaken under fluorescent lights in the Great War. Since at least the time of Julius Caesar, those who carry information have used secret codes to shield the content of their messages from prying eyes. What we think of as the computer, a machine, was built at Bletchley Park, conceived out of the urgent need to perform calculations to break German codes on a scale that no man or woman could manage. Alan Turing laid the intellectual foundations for such a machine, while Tommy Flowers built it. The machine, Colossus, performed statistical calculations using algorithms to help deliver victory. That achievement was kept secret, but a deception designed to mislead opponents also deceived Britain itself. The culture of secrecy that surrounded first Bletchley and then its successor, GCHQ, came at a price. Bletchley also witnessed the first tentative steps in forming the closest intelligence alliance seen in history, one that persists to this day. It was the US, thanks to the intimacy there between spies and private companies, rather than Britain, that would forge ahead in computing. During the Cold War, the desperate effort both to hunt Soviet spies and to provide early warning of nuclear Armageddon took computers beyond code-breaking and into massive data processing and traffic analysis. In the subsequent decades, computers would begin to move out of the secret world and into public view. Anyone listening to experts talking woefully today about cybersecurity and the manifold vulnerabilities of our systems might think this discussion was uniquely modern. In fact, it is a good half century old. Much less has changed than people would realize from the days when a young captain in the U.S. Air Force worried about computers controlling nuclear missiles and began to wonder how others might subvert or get inside systems. Fears of Trojan horses and trap doors in both computing hardware and software are far from new. As computers spread, people began to understand more about the amount of sensitive data they held and their potential vulnerability. The use of secret codes to protect information had been one of the most closely guarded secrets of spies and states, but in the 1970s, a pair of Californian academics would face down the power of the NSA as they took the secret of encryption into the public domain. And as computers began to talk to each other, a third option, beyond those of code breaking and data processing to support espionage, opened up: using computers to perform the central act of stealing information. The inherent weaknesses of computers themselves and of a system, the Internet, built to share and not secure, provided a means to carry out that age-old task on a scale and from a distance that would transform the enterprise of espionage. The KGB would be the first to understand the potential in the late 1980s as a bunch of drugged-up hackers from Germany rooted around American military systems in search of secrets for their Soviet paymasters. Spies and hackers had met, and computer espionage had arrived. The Internet, with its offer of anonymity, became a perfect playground both for spies seeking to work undercover and also their targets. People have spied from land, from the sea, in the air, and from space, and so cyberspace inevitably became a new domain for what is often called the second oldest profession, following hot on the heels of the first. Western countries like Britain and America, and even their Cold War rival Russia, have their own preconceived ideas of what espionage involves from watching James Bond films and reading Jean Le Carré. Espionage involves professional spies doing dangerous and duplicitous things in shady places. But this is somewhat misleading and misses the important role of computers and data. Filing cabinets have always been as important to spying as guns and gadgets, and computers and their connectivity have opened up a new world of digital intelligence, which in turn has transformed the traditional role of human espionage, sometimes enabling it, sometimes supplanting it. Today, Jean Le Carré's George Smiley would be sitting at a computer terminal, not walking the streets. Our understanding of espionage can be too rooted both in our own narrow cultural experience and in out-of-date notions. The Internet and computers have changed spying in ways that the popular imagination has yet to appreciate fully, in the use of data to search for the signal amid the noise, to find meaning within apparent randomness and things and people that want to remain hidden. Cyber espionage facilitates spying on a scale previously unimagined and at a distance, changing the calculus of risk that had previously inhibited its use. Another problem that stems from our misconception of spying is that we struggle to place new sources of cyber espionage into a narrative we know and understand when there is no reason why they should conform. China, for instance, pioneered the use of computer espionage to target Western companies for economic gain and to seek out dissent. Corporate espionage and intellectual property theft are not new, but computers have raised the stakes, drawing companies onto the front lines as they have their own secrets exposed, as Sony realized when it was taken apart by hackers said to be from North Korea. Meanwhile, the hills of Dharamshala in northern India, home to the Tibetan government in exile, have been at the forefront of one of the earliest, most sophisticated campaigns by a state that has entangled both the British and American governments and one of the world's most powerful technology companies, Google. The fears over China's rise are also evident in the controversy surrounding Huawei, a telecoms giant. As computers and communications merge, Washington fears that China will be able to do what Britain did in the First World War, hit a kill switch and spy through control of the infrastructure. Military intelligence once meant sending people undercover to make maps of far-off lands, or in the run-up to the First World War, to creep round German dockyards seeking out details of the latest battleship under construction. Later in the 20th century, it meant using satellites and intercepts to do much the same thing. But in the 21st century, it involves mapping out the computer networks that run another country's power supplies, ready for war, or stealing the latest designs of a stealth fighter so that vulnerabilities can be identified and perhaps even implanted. Computer espionage overlaps with the world of reconnaissance, but also has moved into that of covert action. The work of intelligence agencies often extends beyond just finding out secrets into the realm of acting covertly or clandestinely when the state wishes its hand to be hidden, for instance, in sabotaging another country's nuclear program. Computers and the Internet have made this a particularly tempting and dangerous possibility for many players. The phrase secret history is bandied around freely these days, but this book, I hope, merits such a subtitle. Much of the story has remained classified for decades, and only now can be pieced together to reveal a picture that had previously been hidden. What emerges is a corrective to the deterministic view that technology was always going to develop in a particular way with particular consequences. National security has been a driver, often unseen, of technological innovation. Companies, governments, individuals, but especially spies, have shaped the world of computing and networking. This process began with Bletchley Park, but carried on into the Cold War and then the era of terrorism that hit America on 9/11 and Britain after 7/7. The traffic not just of data but of ideas between the secret world and the commercial world is a central part of this story, and it flows both ways. The search for patterns in vast amounts of data was first undertaken by spies in the Cold War to look for signs of abnormal Soviet activity. In turn, as the kind of computing power required became accessible to the private sector in the 1990s, companies developed database marketing to track their customers. The spies after 9/11 and 7/7 then borrowed technology and techniques from the private sector to sift through a vast sea of data to look for unknowns, to find suspected terrorists, turning their focus domestically as well as abroad and making use of what they called the home field advantage of the commercial world. Computers have become all-pervasive. The giant colossus has been replaced by a computer infinitely more powerful that fits in our pockets. Black box sentries stand guard at the border points at which the Internet reaches our shores, sifting vast torrents of data. Spies initially struggled to deal with this, but eventually worked out how to master the Internet rather than be defeated by it, creating what has been called a second golden age of signals intelligence, the first being the days of Bletchley Park. But the exposure of some of these secret programs by Edward Snowden raised complicated issues about what privacy means in the modern world. Campaigners fear that the power of computers and surveillance will crush dissenting voices, leading to self-censorship that will reinforce existing power structures in many states. The spies believe their methods are the only hope of finding those individuals and groups who wish us harm and who have themselves moved into the online world. The hunger for data is becoming more intense, with more and more people and places seeking to acquire it and analyze it, challenging the very notion of what spying is and who spies are. Espionage over computer networks, hacking, is becoming commoditized and commercialized, and is no longer the domain of just a few states, as it was a quarter of a century ago when it began. Rather, it is something that affects us all and can be done to us and even by us. We can all retrieve, analyze, and correlate information in a way that a spy of a few decades ago could never have dreamt of. So, have we all become spies now? Writing about intelligence is challenging. Some elements of this story have been glimpsed elsewhere. Chinese espionage, the NSA's and GCHQ's activities, the rise of the Internet. But this book seeks to explore avenues and stories previously unknown and bring together the disparate strands in a way that reveals the connections between the algorithms of Bletchley and those of Google, the encryption of Enigma machines and that of modern smartphones, and relates them to the spying of Britain, America, Russia, China, and others. It is based on first-hand reporting in Britain, the US, and China, alongside declassified documents and more than 100 interviews with a range of people intimately involved, from spy chiefs to hackers. This book does not seek to cover every aspect of computer security. The issue of cyber crime and cyber war, if such a thing exists, are not explored, other than where they overlap with the central theme of spying. Nor does the book aspire to cover the story of computers and spies in every country in every detail. Individual accounts have been selected to convey the broader narrative. Historical parallels are deployed to show where computers have changed espionage and where they have not. It does not approach the subject from a technical perspective. The last computer code I wrote was in the 1980s on a much-loved Commodore VIC-20. My aspiration is rather to ensure that the history of spying and the history of technology are portrayed in conjunction with each other, and also with events in the outside world. Spying has always been controversial, raising complicated ethical questions. This is not a book that sets out to tell people what to think. It is a work of history that aims to explain how we got where we are so that people can be informed enough to make up their own minds. We are facing a future in which everything is connected to the Internet, in which the physical and virtual increasingly merge. This is a future in which we will leave a rich digital seam that can, for good or for ill, be mined, not just by intelligence agencies, but by many others as well. The history told in this book and the issues it raises are not just for technologists or intelligence agencies. They are for everyone.